skip the meeting if you UC please. This week, Sarah Hamilton was in some hot water for speaking at a UCP fundraiser during a council meeting.
We'll talk with Jeremy Appel, who broke the story.
Hi, I'm Troy.
I'm Mac.
And we are
Speaking Municipally.
Welcome back to Speaking Municipally, episode 256. We'll be talking, as Mac mentioned, with Jeremy Appel later in the episode. But first, a quick update on everything that happened in the last week. We were very close to a strike, and now we are nowhere close to a strike. As it appears, everyone seems to have tentatively agreed.
Yeah, the details we have so far, 6.25% salary increase over 3 years and a $1,000 lump sum payment. I understand it still needs to be ratified. I don't know if I saw any reporting about when that vote would actually take place, Troy. Did you?
There's no ratification date. The city has said they're leaving that sort of up to the union to organize with its membership, but all signs point to probably sometime next week.
And the libraries remained open, the rec centers remained open, so crisis averted.
And that's not the only update we have. The Court of King's Bench has ordered the Coalition for Justice and Human Rights to pay $11,500 to the City of Edmonton in legal fees. This was the organization that was suing the city to halt the encampment clearing response, who the court found didn't have standing. And now the city has been awarded costs.
This is really interesting to me because the city had said, you know, it spent $42,000 in legal fees and they wanted the coalition to pay $25,000 of that. So more than half of those fees. And in this decision, Justice Jonathan Martin said he awarded only partial costs, the $11,500, as you said, because he found that the case brought matters of public interest to the court. And like, wasn't that the whole point of this case in the beginning? Like, how do we find that they don't have standing on the one hand and then find that they do kind of have standing, at least enough to pay legal fees? That part baffles me a little bit, Troy.
No one can argue that the Coalition for Justice and Human Rights had no impact, right? Even as they brought this action forward, it changed the city's encampment response. It changed the way that the city organizes and disseminates information. Like, they had a material effect. Mm-hmm. And I think the judge was recognizing that. Not a lawyer. The standing decision kind of baffles me. I guess I'll have to watch a few more episodes of Suits if I want to understand this.
Well, of course, this week, we need to talk about Councillor Sarah Hamilton, who's been in the news because of her attendance at a Politics and Prosecco UCP fundraiser. There was a story this week published at The Orchard about her absence and her participation in this event, identified as a city councillor, which for those of you who have listened to our podcast before, we've talked a lot about council's code of conduct, might cause some issues for the councillor. And so we wanted to talk about that this week, and we thought, who better to talk to about that than the person who wrote the article? And so joining us today on the show is Jeremy Appel from The Orchard. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me, Mac. Speaking Municipally is on heavy rotation in my household, so it's good to be here.
Yeah, that's either a good thing or a very, very bad thing when a guest says they have listened before.
Jeremy, we know you are into politics. I got to know, do you drink Prosecco? Are you a Prosecco guy?
No, I don't make that kind of money.
So with Sarah Hamilton, obviously you were the one who broke this story and then subsequently it was picked up by the Journal. What was it about this event that made you think, yeah, the people got to know about this?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, this happened in the midst of intense bargaining discussions between City Council and CSU 52. The stakes were pretty high for attending that council meeting. Now, because it was in camera and because they were discussing multiple things in camera, we can't know for certain that she skipped out on the bargaining discussion, but I would imagine bargaining discussions took up a significant chunk of that time. Second of all, of course, is the UCP talking about bringing political parties to municipal politics. So I thought it was timely for those two key reasons. If someone had brought this to my attention at another time, I probably would have pursued it, but I'm not sure it would have resonated as much if it weren't for those two factors I just mentioned.
Yeah, in journalism, we often ask, like, why are you telling me this now? And so you had a couple of really strong reasons why you're telling us this now. One of the things I wanted to ask you is that, as some of our listeners may know, you just published a book about Jason Kenney, congratulations, and all about his pursuit of power. And so what about folks who say, well, the only reason you wrote about this is because you don't like the UCP and Sarah Hamilton is closely aligned with the UCP? You know, they might point to, for example, Michael Janz recently endorsing an NDP leadership candidate.
Right. And a key difference between what Janz did and what Hamilton did is, from my understanding, originally on Janz's endorsement, it identified him as a city councilor, which you can't do. That was the problem. Hamilton leaving council business to attend something else, I mean, that's not against the code of conduct, right? Like, it's not good, but it's not the same as headlining a partisan fundraiser, which advertised your attendance there as a city councilor. In Janz's case, again, his endorsement initially said he was an Edmonton city councilor. He changed it to former school board trustee. If Sarah Hamilton was advertised as a former spokesperson for the Canadian coal lobby, which she was, that would have been fine because she wasn't speaking as a member of city council. That's not what occurred. Just bringing it back to my book, that it isn't a partisan takedown. I made a conscious effort. I mean, it's critical. I think people know where I stand politically. It's, you know, firmly on the left.
Yeah.
But I am routinely critical of the NDP and progressive politicians as well. I think that everyone ought to be held to account. And maybe I hold progressives to account in ways that conservatives wouldn't appreciate. The Janz stuff, again, if he did the exact same thing,
yeah,
but with an NDP fundraiser, I absolutely would have done that. Sorry, though, there probably wouldn't have been as much of a need for me to, because I think the media would have pounced on that.
I don't think it undermines your point at all. Like, I think what we believe is you should be transparent and upfront and not pretend to be objective or unbiased, because those things don't really exist, right? And so people know where you're coming from, right? Just want to come back to the council code of conduct. So there's a couple of parts of the code of conduct that deal with partisan stuff, right? And so part E is all about respectful interactions, and it's really talking about not making employees do things that are partisan. And then the part that you're writing about is part G, and in particular number 6 and number 7, and it's pretty clear in there. While acting in their capacity as elected officials, councillors will not attend partisan political events or contribute money or real city property for the benefit of a political party. And so the part that maybe is open to interpretation, maybe not, is the acting in their capacity as elected officials. And so you pointed out in your story that she was clearly identified as a city councilor in the advertising for the event. I assume you've seen her subsequent statement, and I think she gave you a statement for the story. So what do you make of that?
Yeah, well, so the statement she gave me was essentially, well, I wasn't speaking on behalf of city council, which I wasn't accusing her of doing. She was speaking as a city councilor, not on behalf of city council, of course.
Yeah.
But she said it's just biographical data, and I am a city councilor, and that's my experience that's relevant to the discussion of women in politics. And that she also spoke at a Liberal Party convention a couple years ago about her experience as a woman in politics. And that panel was, besides her, a bunch of partisan liberals. But I couldn't find any literature for that specifically advertised her as a city councilor, anyone on that panel. I just found the program, which just listed a bunch of names. And then you Google them and it's like, oh, this person was the Liberal candidate federally in Barrhead, right? This person was the party's president. Sarah Hamilton is a city councilor. What I found interesting about her subsequent statement that was public was it was more detailed. She then said, I had no idea it was going to advertise me as a city councilor, which wasn't what she told me before. She really leaned into, I think, the woman in politics angle, sort of, I think, weaponizing small L liberal identity politics and insinuating that if people have a problem with her leaving council at a very important time to attend this event, maybe you have a problem with women in politics, was how I read it. But perhaps I'm being overly cynical. And when she responded to my request for comment, which I didn't expect her to do, by the way, because like I'm like a guy with an online newsletter, right? I'm not like a media. So credit to her for responding to me. She was also like, you should take it up with the integrity commissioner. And she was also, I think, playing a semantic game with in my capacity as a counselor. Well, no, I was attending in my capacity as a woman in politics. And I'm a woman in politics because I'm a city councilor. Mm-hmm. I'm sure people have filed complaints. I haven't, but I told people where they could if they wanted to. It will be interesting to see what the integrity commissioner says about that. I mean, I think it's pretty clear cut.
I know that there has been at least one report filed with the integrity commissioner, so we will probably get an answer eventually. The integrity commissioner is pretty notoriously slow to evaluate some of these things. I do find myself kind of agreeing with Sarah Hamilton a little bit on this point, insofar as like it is a fact. She is a city councilor. I don't know that the litmus test of acting in your capacity as a city councilor should be in the advertising materials, because it is true that she's a city councilor and that is germane to why she was speaking there. But I think back to our discussion that we had with Ann Stevenson about the police commission. That's another instance where it's like you have to be very careful about what hat you're wearing when you're talking. And Ann took very deliberate pains when she was answering a question to say, I'm putting on my city councilor hat now. I'm putting on my police commissioner hat now. I'm putting on Ann, the person who likes to walk downtown hat now. I think really that diligence is what the code is trying to uncover. What struck me on the response that you got was that she didn't understand or vet the event. She seemed to say that she didn't know it was a fundraiser, but like it was, you know, $150 per head to appear at this thing. It was a UCP fundraiser. That, I think, is the more damning aspect of this. The idea that you're not being diligent about how you're being perceived in public. Because like with all things in the Council Code of Conduct, it's not about the mechanics of what you actually did. It's about how those perceptions impact the public view of Edmonton City Council.
And Hamilton, of course, does have deep ties to the PCs, at least. Stephen Mandel in particular. Catherine O'Neill, who is the party's president, endorsed her initial run for City Council in 2017 when she was first elected. And I don't think there's anything wrong about that. And I think there's a whole other debate about partisanship in municipal politics that I'm somewhat ambivalent on, but speaking at fundraiser is fundamentally different from endorsing a candidate for leadership. Even if you're doing so as a city councilor, like that's not good either, because the code of conduct is the code of conduct. Also, Hamilton sat on the subcommittee for the code of conduct, so you would think she knows it very well. Obviously, we don't know what she said at the event, what her remarks were like. I mean, if anyone's listening and they're there, want to tell me about it, feel free to reach out.
Send us the secret recording.
Yeah. But yeah, and also Danielle, the premier was at this function, right?
So, yeah, in the photo you posted, they're sitting right next to one another, right? She's sitting right next to the premier at that event.
Yeah, and so again, that raises myriad questions. And, you know, I think people who are more sympathetic to Councillor Hamilton I've definitely seen a lot of whataboutism regarding Jans and Salvador in the NDP. Two things can be wrong at the same time, and they can be wrong in different ways. And one thing can be more wrong than the other and more concerning. Because another thing is the UCP are actually in power.
The thing that struck me, and I know Keith Gerine at the Edmonton Journal wrote a column about party politics this week. And the thing that struck me is exactly sort of what you're describing, equating what Hamilton did and what Jans may have done in endorsing a leader, or what the NDP might have done in supporting candidates in a municipal election. I'm young. I haven't been alive for most of the PC dynasty, but the PC's always endorsed candidate. It struck me as like when a conservative in Alberta does something, it's status quo. When someone vaguely orange does something, it's nefarious and upsetting. The idea that Councillor Hamilton skipped away from the meeting to go to this UCP fundraiser, but this was okay to do because someone else had endorsed a leadership candidate before. In your reporting on this, you talked a lot about the code of conduct, which I find is actually like the weaker argument against what Councillor Hamilton did here. I get what you're saying earlier, that it doesn't violate the code of conduct to skip out on an important council meeting in camera to go fundraise for the UCP, but it really ought to. Like, that struck me as the sort of like worst part of all of it. While Councillor Hamilton, you know, might have rules lawyered around, it may not violate the code of conduct for this specific reason, the sort of like optics has sort of been left completely unaddressed in that this is something that she did and something that's a pattern of behavior, because in the last 4-year budget, she skipped out of votes on Tim Cartmell's motion to go headline the UCP press release for the committee that they had spun up to undermine council. So this is not the first time this has happened with a specific counselor. And I recall when that happened last time, she went on Ryan Jesperson and said, the relationship that I've impacted with my colleagues, that's something that I'm going to have to own and repair. And it seems, you know, a year later, she's just opted not to repair it.
You can't help but wonder whether the UCP are trying to have her run for them in South Edmonton, which is really the only part of Edmonton that's winnable for them. Her having this ostensibly nonpartisan or bipartisan background would be a major asset if the UCP want to gain a toehold in Edmonton. I think with the code of conduct, however, it's just, that's like, it's clear cut. It's like, this is what she did. This is what the rules say. But yes, I do think the more interesting part of the story, which is why that was my lead, is that she skipped out on important bargaining negotiations to engage in partisan political activity. Whether we buy that she had no idea that it was a partisan fundraiser or not, like, that is, of course, the meat of the story. But the code of conduct, I think, is something that you can point to, and the rules are the rules, right? But the question is, are the rules reasonable? She's given no indication that she thinks otherwise.
Yeah. Do you have a prediction on what might happen here? Assuming that, as Troy said, there's at least one or two, you know, complaints that have been filed with the Integrity Commissioner. Do you think this is a, well, we didn't do anything for Mike Nickel, we're sure not going to do anything to Sarah Hamilton. Do you think there's a clarification that might be necessary to the code of conduct? Do you think everyone will just forget about it?
Well, I think everyone will certainly forget about it. And again, I'm not a lawyer. I think Jamie Pytel will probably find that that was a violation of the code of conduct. I think Hamilton will issue a half-assed apology and that will be the end of it. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe it will be like what happened to Mike Nickel 3 times, where her allies on council were like, yeah, you know what? We don't care. Who cares? She did nothing wrong. And interestingly, Hamilton was not one of Nickel's allies on council in this regard, right? She voted in favor of sanctioning him all 3 times. I mean, you saw that in Calgary too with Jeremy Farkas, who council overwhelmingly voted in favor of sanctioning.
Right.
And the Integrity Commissioner was like, you should apologize. He's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And no one could do anything, right? I mean, I do think the Farkas, I know this is an Edmonton politics podcast, so I won't talk too much about Calgary, but I think what he did, and obviously Edmonton, Calgary's codes of conduct aren't the exact same, was pretty small potatoes compared to this.
You brought up Jeremy Farkas, and he occupies a very sore spot in my heart, because I was running as a young guy in Ward 11 in Edmonton when he was running as a young guy in Ward 11 in Calgary. And the amount of times I was confused with Jeremy Farkas and I got emails that were very, very conservative, intended for Jeremy Farkas. It's off the charts. So I've definitely been inside his inbox, but not in the way that you'd normally expect.
Maybe as you pointed out, Troy, the apology isn't really necessary in this case. Like, maybe it's just a clarification of the code of conduct, because, you know, the spirit of what they're trying to avoid with that is, maybe if you give people the benefit of the doubt here and assume they're acting, you know, as genuinely and as positively as possible, like, maybe we should allow for women in council positions to talk about their experience as a woman on council when we know that's been a challenge, right? And doing it at a fundraiser is where it gets a bit tricky, right?
I think that Jamie Pytel won't recommend a sanction in the same way that you know, Mike Nickel did a lot of bad stuff, and there were some sanctions recommended, but a lot of it was just recommendations that council enact a social media policy.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, the advertising for this event is a lot like the social media policy. It's about like communications online and, you know, how information gets disseminated. Slightly different, but in the same sort of ballpark. So I think what we're going to get is just a recommendation of a clarification and maybe, you know, Councillor Hamilton saying, okay, we'll discuss this and we'll make sure to be more clear in the future.
But one more thing, of course, is UCP is bringing forth legislation that will allow partisanship at municipal level. So there's also a question of whether it becomes a moot point if we don't believe Sarah Hamilton's account, which I don't. Was that a calculation too? Well, we're going to have municipal parties, and no, they're not going to be called the UCP or the NDP, but everyone's going to know which provincial parties they roughly align with. And so at that point, then she may have violated the code of conduct as it is now, but are they going to have to update those sections of the code of conduct that deal with partisanship when there's open partisanship at City Hall?
It's kind of like legalizing marijuana and then, you know, back processing marijuana convictions. Like, it doesn't make sense. It's legal now.
Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for coming to talk to us about the story. Before we let you go, I just wanted to ask a couple of quick things about the Orchard, because as we say at Taproot, anybody can commit an act of journalism. I know you're a journalist, but you said you're like a guy with a newsletter. Well, what you did here was an act of journalism, right? You brought a story to the fore here that I think was relevant for people. So before you go, tell us, how's the Orchard doing? You know, what's your assessment of the state of local media?
Like everywhere in Canada and also the United States, but especially in Canada, the state of local media is bleak, right? I mean, there's literally one newspaper that takes two different forms and has a different configuration of right-wing columnists. And then you have three big broadcasters, right, who are, I mean, all of them are part of these nationwide conglomerates, and they all do great work on a local level. But as there are fewer and fewer jobs, it's harder to keep up with everything that's happening.
Yeah.
And I think political actors are definitely very happy with that prospect of there not being additional scrutiny, which is why I think it's great that outlets like Taproot Edmonton, like The Orchard, exist. I mean, I don't always cover local politics. I do whenever it, you know, sort of comes across my desk, so to speak. We lack the same editorial constraints as the Edmonton Journal or the CBC or Global do, right? We can sort of be upfront about our biases and still at the same time abide by journalistic principles, you know, reaching out to someone for comment if you have a story that makes them look bad. I think there's a promise in independent media, whether it's an actual outlet like you guys are or sort of an independent newsletter like mine. There's a lot of promise in there. It's just the contraction of mainstream media is happening, I think, a lot quicker than the growth of independent media. And so that gap is concerning.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm glad there's other people out there who are trying to do good journalism on behalf of our communities. So thanks for doing what you do, Jeremy. And thanks again for coming to talk to us about this story. We'll be paying attention to what happens, and maybe when the inevitable response or update on a complaint comes forward, we'll have you back.
Yeah, I'd love that.
And of course, before our guests leave, we always like to give them a little section to say anything we missed or plug something that you want. I figure, given what you've just released, you've got something to plug before we let you go.
Yes, I have a book out, Kennyism, Jason Kenney's Pursuit of Power, published by Dundurn Press. You can buy it pretty much anywhere you buy your books. I am quite proud of how it turned out. It's my first book. I think it's really the culmination of watching the wildness of the past several years in Alberta, how Jason Kenney really embodies a particular brand of right-wing politics that isn't going away, even though he's gone away for now. So check it out if you're interested in an account of the tumult of the Kenny years and also where it fits in sort of the broader political moment that we're in.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Jeremy. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, great to be here and take care.
Well, Troy, one other quick Hamilton thing before we move on. You also tweeted about Sarah Hamilton this week. And as you said in this episode with Jeremy, you think that the bigger issue here is that she skipped out on a meeting. And so that was a prompt for you to look at her attendance records. And what did you see?
As part of preparing for this episode, I was looking into sort of patterns of behavior, you know, looking back at when she skipped out on the budget meeting to go to the UCP press release. And, you know, what better way to establish patterns of behavior than looking at data? And so I pulled up the data on attendance records. The way attendance records works for council is their attendance per vote. So you can vote either yes, no, absent, or abstain on any individual vote. Meetings, of course, will have several votes. In terms of councillors, Hamilton is the absolute worst for attendance. She has been absent for 227 votes. Her nearest competitor is Tim Cartmell with 215. Jan's at 208, Aaron Paquette at 182. And on the bottom end, of course, we've got Andrew Knack, who has no recorded absent votes.
That dude never misses a meeting. He's always there. And the mayor's also not in the chart, but that's for a different reason.
Right? Yeah, so the way that city council works is the mayor is an ex officio, however you pronounce that, Latin is hard, member of all committees, which basically means he's a member of all committees, even though he's not expected to show up. That means in the minutes, he shows up as absent for a lot of votes that he's not expected to be. So he has almost double the number of absent votes as his nearest competitor, which sure skews the data in a really unhelpful way.
Well, Councillor Knack is setting the bar really high consistently. I think he has throughout his entire time on council. But one of the things we don't get with the absent votes is a reason why. So what do we know about why Councillor Hamilton has been absent for that many votes?
So we don't, because she hasn't communicated anything. She has communicated previously that she's got a small child. We both mm-hmm. know that when we spoke to her at the start of the term. It was a very newborn baby. Michael Jans also has a very small child, and he's also up there in the absences. I yep. know from speaking to council that childcare is an issue. One yep. of the changes that council made this term was instead of having meetings end at 5:30, they end at 5. So as you know, Mac, it's easier to get kids from daycare and you're not yep. an absentee parent.
Right.
One of the things I've tried to get council to do for the better part of three terms now is release excused absences or absence reasons. Aaron Paquette had reached out to me after tweeting this and said, you know, the FCM, the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, and other council-appointed boards can often conflict with council meetings. That can cause it. He also did reveal in a personal note that early on in his service on council, he had a family member that got cancer, and he had mm-hmm. to choose between showing up with meetings and being there for her last minutes. And that's just not something that's displayed, right? A counselor has a personal or family issue. There's no reporting dashboard that they can say it's an excused absence. There's no way that they can communicate this down to their constituents other than tweeting it, which, you know, not all issues is appropriate for tweeting. But that's the fundamental problem here. This is a data point of attendance records. I consider this a sentence. It doesn't tell a story. I think to look at a story, you have to look at all the things in the aggregate. But one thing you note here is, okay, for someone who we're noting a pattern of behavior of not showing up for council meetings, it sure is damning to see the number of absences. You can't draw conclusions from this alone, but I do think it really is helping frame a story. And I wanted, speaking of a story, to just throw back to a few years ago. Mac, I don't know if you remember when Avenue Edmonton was still a thing. But there was an Avenue Edmonton headline story, the front runner, Edmonton's yeah. political rising star, all about Sarah Hamilton.
I think we talked about that at the time, did we not?
We did. And even at the time, it seemed a little peculiar. Mm. But I think it'd be hard for anyone to argue right now with this council that the star of counsel is Sarah Hamilton, because for better or worse, she hasn't really made much waves on this council. It's funny, if you like Google a counselor's name and Edmonton City Council, you know, if you get Michael Jans, he's going to be saying one thing or another. He says ostentatious things every week. If you Google Ashley Salvador, you'll see things about parking minimums and about the bike grids. If you Google Jennifer Rice, you're going to see her trying her darndest to lower taxes. But if you Google Sarah Hamilton, you mostly get articles about her showing up at UCP events. There, even when she was on the police commission in, you know, the most contentious debates, she really wasn't quoted much in the media. She really wasn't taking much in the way of stands. So it could be behind the scenes work. It could be this is her quiet counsel. This is another thing on the story of Sarah Hamilton and this term of counsel where, you know, I'm not quite sure what's going on there. Of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the big news of this week that's hitting City Council, and that is Boyle Street and the Bissell Center are going to be facing a funding shortfall and will likely have to close some day shelter spaces because Council has opted not to renew some funding to the organizations.
Yeah, this is one of those you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't kind of decisions, isn't it? So Council decided not to renew this funding, which the mayor has said was always meant to be temporary, and of course, in so doing, highlighted the need for provincial and federal governments to take responsibility here for this long-term support. The decision was made in private, which I don't love. I think we should always have these kinds of conversations out in the open, but they made that decision. If they had decided to renew the funding, does that harm their pretty consistent stance that the province and the feds need to come to the table? They're the ones that hold the bags of money to help us solve this problem. You know, maybe I can understand why council made the decision that they did, and yet it's still going to have a negative impact on the people who need the support of these organizations most. And I don't know if it's worth political football for that to be the case.
If you talk to members of council, I'm sure they'll say things like they're in a really tough financial situation that doesn't seem to be getting better.
Yeah.
We also heard this week that, you know, there are some unfunded provincial items, like, for example, paying for the Shigella outbreak that AHS apparently owes the city $2 million for that they never paid, or firefighters spending roughly $25 million responding to health calls on the city's dime. So those are some things that council is considering. As we're recording this, Mayor Amarjeet Sohi has just tweeted out a statement. He says that the city of Edmonton has provided temporary emergency funding for these programs. This funding is set to expire this spring. He will be sending a letter to Minister Nixon to ask the province to step up and fund this important work, which falls within provincial jurisdiction. And he has instructed his staff to work with Boyle Street and the Bissell Center to find a way forward. So sort of what you'd expect, but there is an action plan at least to try and lobby the government for some more funding on this front. Boyle Street and Bissell are going to have to make what they have last. They can't burn through the cash, as one might do in the rapid fire segment. Edmonton City Hall has reopened to the public to much celebration. The inaugural event, Roll for Coal, saw coal mining companies and industry lobbyists gather in the foyer to celebrate the black rocks that the group hoped to mine from the eastern slopes of the Rockies. When a confused public asked why the first event inside City Hall was focused on coal lobbyists, Mayor Amarjeet Sohi indicated that Councillor Sarah Hamilton vetted the event.
With Nenshi's campaign for the Alberta NDP leadership gaining steam, a group of UCP-affiliated community organizers have been established, with a primary goal of becoming Purple People Eaters.
The City of Edmonton celebrated Transit Operator and Worker Appreciation Day on Monday by washing down LRT car interiors with water instead of urine, as is custom. Speaking Municipally is a publication of Taproot Edmonton. Like Jeremy had mentioned, local news is in dire straits, but Taproot is doing fine, and they're doing only fine with your support. You can continue to support and help Taproot continue to grow and tell great stories by buying a membership. And now, Mac, when Stephanie was on, neither of us knew how much a Taproot membership cost. How much does a Taproot membership cost?
$10 a month or $100 a year. If you're an individual, it's a really great way to support the mission and ensure that a publication like Taproot exists in your local community. If you potentially have access to the finances of your employer or a company and you're interested in some sponsorship or advertising, we've got those opportunities available too, and I'd love to chat with you.
Of course, even if you don't pay, all of our news is available for free for everyone to enjoy and learn from at edmonton.taproot.news. And that's all for this week. Until next week, I'm Troy.
I'm Mac.
I'm Jeremy.
And we're
Speaking Municipally.